Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In Zulu, their name means "Give Us Hope." The singers of South Africa's Siniki Temba Choir, all African, mostly women, all HIV positive, give voice to the spirit of survival. Their songs and their stories illuminate the human face of the South African AIDS tragedy. This hour, On Point, the Siniki Temba Choir, heart and hope in the fight against AIDS. We begin tonight with the impact of AIDS on a mounting African famine. Bad weather, bad policies, and sick millions are driving a new fear of famine. More than 30 million Africans across the continent are spiraling into desperate hunger. Famine is an old story in Africa, but the AIDS factor is new and huge. Earlier, I spoke with Michael Grunwald, staff writer for The Washington Post in Johannesburg. I asked him to describe the projected dimensions of Africa's new famine.
Right now, there are 14 million people in sub-Saharan Africa that are at risk of starvation, and there are another 14 million in Ethiopia and Eritrea. So people are very worried about the possible consequences.
And Michael Grunwald, how do AIDS and famine interact? This seems to be the new variable that everyone's focused on.
They sort of interact with each other. The AIDS exacerbates the famine, and famine exacerbates the health crisis. And you have people who are too sick to work, too sick to plant crops. They're using money that they might use to buy seeds or are going to buy health care. So food is not getting planted. People are hungry because they're spending all their money on treatment for opportunistic infections. At the same time, people who are hungry, it just really exacerbates their disease. They're dying much quicker. They don't really have statistics on it yet, but it's clear that mortality rates are going up in areas where there just isn't enough food.
And we see countries where a fifth or even a quarter of the population are now HIV positive, where life expectancies have fallen by 20, 25 years just in the last few years. So this isn't just a smattering of people affected. This is great populations.
In some of these countries, it really feels like, you know, half the working age population. It's like an entire generation is being lost. And these are the people who know how to farm. These are the people who can go out and do the work. These are the people who are supposed to be teaching their children how to pass on these skills. It's reaching the kind of crisis where people are worried that this isn't just a temporary emergency where they're going to have to ship in some food and then next year everything will be okay. They're worrying that it's becoming a kind of chronic condition.
You've been reporting from Swaziland, where the situation looks pretty bad. You've got life expectancy in some of these southern African countries now down around 40, 45 years, even lower sometimes. And yet in Swaziland, you found ordinary people were still not freely and frankly referring to AIDS, that they're using euphemisms and kind of talking around it. Am I interpreting that correctly?
That's right. There's still clearly a great stigma about it. You'll hear that people had sores all over, or that they died of some kind of blood disease, or sometimes it's called TB, and sometimes it is TB, but it's TB is infection coming out of the weakened state from HIV. It's obviously a very big problem, because as long as people continue to deny it, they're not going to go get tested, and they're going to keep spreading it.
We read that traditionally Africa had coping mechanisms to deal with famine. There would be aid from outside, but also a kind of hunkering down to get through, that it would be the very young or the very old who tended to die. Now we're reading that it's very often vulnerable, working-age, prime-of-life adults who are dying or who are not able to pull the rest of their community through. How do aid agencies see this situation righting itself longer term?
I think one of the real fears is that when you see so many of these child-headed households where both parents are dead and just have these orphans sort of left to fend for themselves, or You have grandparent-headed households where people who have made it past the age where AIDS is so prevalent are forced to sort of back into the workforce and taking care of a house full of children. You wonder how people are going to deal with it for years and years.
Give us a sense, Michael, from what you witnessed in the field of how individual households are up against the famine problem. What are they missing? What do they need?
Well, they need food. Most of these people are subsistence farmers. You know, that's kind of a specialized profession in the United States. But in the rural areas of southern Africa, that's what just about everybody does. And that's how they expect to eat. And if it doesn't rain on time, or if they don't have seeds, or if they have seeds but they don't have a plow, or if they have a plow but they're too sick to pull it, they're just not going to get a crop out of those fields. And they're just going to be dependent on these organizations coming from outside, bringing them in food. There's been some efforts to bring in seeds, but it's really slow and it's late. And then in Zimbabwe, 90% of the subsistence farmers have no seeds. So you have to assume that this is just going to get worse because you can't reap what you don't sow.
Do relief agencies then speak of famine relief programs in terms of both food and, I don't know, antiretroviral drugs at this point? Is there now a cocktail response required to famine itself, one that also addresses AIDS?
Well, the first response that the UN in particular has talked about is increasing the food rations for people with AIDS and people suffering from the infections, just basically to extend their lives, because otherwise they're just going to die so much faster and they're not going to be able to work. They just need nutrition. Antiretrovirals, as you know, Tom, they're very expensive, and you know there hasn't been, except in Botswana, anywhere that is giving these out at will. You're starting to see in South Africa some of the mining firms, they're losing so many workers that they're starting to give them out in selected cases. But it's certainly not part of the immediate famine response.
Michael Grunwald, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Michael Grunwald is a staff writer for The Washington Post. He spoke with me earlier from Johannesburg. Africa and AIDS, the numbers defy belief. 29 million people infected with HIV, 10% of the world's population, but almost 70% of global AIDS cases. 11 million AIDS orphans, a continent collapsing under the weight of an unimaginable epidemic. But there is a human face to Africa's HIV/AIDS crisis. It's men, women, and children struggling to cope in societies where AIDS is pervasive and taboo. It's fathers and mothers surviving against cultural, economic, and political odds. And tonight, it's HIV-positive African women in studio sharing their joys and sorrows through song. My guests tonight are two members of South Africa's Siniki Temba Choir, and for them, singing is a kind of therapy. Music expresses the pain of HIV/AIDS sufferers, but it also sings of hope, Archbishop Desmond Tutu says. And in Africa's rich tradition of song and dance, the Siniki Temba Choir puts a hopeful human face on the steep challenges of living with AIDS. Can you imagine living in a world where one in every four or five of your neighbors has AIDS? What happens to a country when its doctors, farmers, teachers, its mothers are dying? Where would you turn for hope, for healing? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. Joining me now in the studio are Pretty and Namusa, two women, two singers from the Siniki Temba Choir. Good evening and welcome, Namusa.
Good evening, sir.
It's nice to have you. And good evening and welcome, Pretty.
Good evening.
Thank you for being with us. Also with us is Nonklankla Muchongo, director of the Siniki Temba Christian Care Center, where the choir is based in Durban, South Africa. Good evening and welcome, Nonklankla Muchongo.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us. Pretty and Namusa, I have to say right off the bat, I'm told these are not your real full given names. Is that right, Namusa?
It's my real name.
Oh, it is. It is yours. And Pretty is a nickname.
Yes.
But there's some in the choir, even now, with everything that we've learned in South Africa and around the world about AIDS, there are women who are using names that are not their own for fear of issues of privacy. Is that right, Nomklangla?
Definitely, it's right. But they've disclosed to their next of kin, but they are trying to protect their families in from their communities.
There's so much I want to talk about tonight, and I'm just so pleased to have you with us. We hear about AIDS in Africa at a very grand scale, and the numbers can be overwhelming, kind of inuring. And I'm looking forward tonight to hearing from you, from this one site on the ground, what the experience is like, what it is to be a woman, both dealing with being HIV positive and also singing through that to hope and maybe a kind of healing. Nomklangla, if you'd be good enough to describe to us the care center, where the choir is based and how it came to be.
Thank you. The center is known as Siniki Temba Christian Care HIV AIDS Center. Mm-hmm. It's a center that belongs to McCord Hospital. McCord Hospital was started by Dr. James McCord in 1909. He's from United States as well. Mm-hmm. It's in Overport, Durban. It's a mission hospital. It gets only 46% subsidy from the government. So the clinic specializes on HIV AIDS.
The clinic opened in 1996. Is that right?
No, the main hospital started...
But the AIDS Care Center or HIV AIDS Care Center?
Started in 1996, mm-hmm. yes.
Now, the clinic is located in a very densely urban, packed part of Durban. Is that correct?
Yes, definitely. The epicenter of HIV AIDS.
And we've talked tonight about a fifth or a fourth of some populations being HIV positive, but in Durban, I understand, it's as much as a third or 35%. Is that correct?
Definitely, yes. Mm.
So what kind of burden has that put on hospitals, on clinics, on society in Durban?
We are overflooded by patients who are HIV positive and destitute. They come on wheelchairs. Our hospital being semi-private, we have started an income generation project in order to cater for the destitute cases. The government hospital are overflooded by patients. Mm.
Nomusa, how did you first get engaged with the clinic, with the Siniki Temba clinic?
Okay, thank you. I was referred by a social worker from a certain hospital because I had my child who was visiting the hospital on a monthly basis. Mm-hmm. So they knew about my story and then they referred me to the center.
So did at that time when your child was born, were you aware that you were HIV positive?
Yes, I was.
And I read that something like 55% of people in hospitals in Durban are HIV positive. So the hospitals are kind of overwhelmed by this issue.
Yeah.
What were you looking for when you turned to Siniki Temba?
Initially, she told me what Siniki Temba was like. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to see for myself. And then I saw that I was expecting to see sick people, I must say, because I wasn't that well informed about HIV, and I was surprised to see the people who were alive, like healthy, just like myself, and it became my home.
Nomusa, how old are you, if I may ask?
I'm 29.
29.
Yes.
One child.
I've got two.
Yeah. And how long have you known that you are HIV positive now?
I've known since 1993.
Since 1993, so you've lived with this almost a decade.
Yes.
How accepting or unaccepting is South African society of people, of women like yourself who are HIV positive? Your family, your community, do they embrace you? Do they not embrace you?
Well, in some cases, people keep it to themselves, like myself. Not many people know about my status. So, because some people, like, some reject us, some families reject other people, so I decided not to. My story is known by a very few people.
So you go secretly to Siniki Temba Clinic?
Not anymore. My family knows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But your friends or your kind of social circle may not.
Yeah, most of them don't.
Mm. And pretty, we're coming up on a break. Gee, I'm too immersed. I'm forgetting myself. We're talking tonight about women, Africa, and AIDS with HIV-positive members of South Africa's Siniki Temba Choir. You can join the conversation. Can you imagine a world where one in four or more are HIV-positive and still unable to attach their names to it?
Are you HIV positive in America? Is someone in your family? And how different do you find the experience here, the stigma? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Let's go into the break with Sinikitemba Choir singing Tina Sogia, sung by the all-African, all-HIV positive Sinikitemba Choir. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
From Boston University.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about women, Africa, and AIDS. My guests are HIV-positive members of South Africa's Sinikitemba Choir. It's based in Durban, South Africa. What do you think? What's the world's responsibility to Africa in the AIDS crisis? And what is Africa's responsibility to itself? Can you imagine the healing power of community and of song? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guests in studio tonight are two of the 17 members of the Sinikitemba Choir now touring the United States, Nomusa and Pretty, and with them, director of the Sinikitemba Christian Care Center in Durban, South Africa, Nonklankla Michongo. Pretty, if I may turn to you, tell us your story. How did you first get connected to the Sinikitemba Christian Care Center?
I went to Prince Mshiyeni Hospital, and the counselor told me about NAPWA, which is a national organization of people living with AIDS, and they referred me to the Sinikitemba. But they told me about other support groups, but I decided to go to Sinikitemba because it's far away from home.
Why did you need, you went there in particular because it was further away?
Yes.
So that it could be more private?
Yes.
What were you looking for? Did you need medical treatment or did you need moral support? What was pushing you?
At that time, it wasn't most medical support. It was about I needed someone to talk to, someone who will support me because I couldn't find it at home.
How long has it been since you have known that you're HIV positive, Pretty?
It's been 2 years.
2 years?
Yes.
And does your family know now? Do your friends and neighbors know now?
No, my family doesn't know. Only one member of my family knows, which is my cousin.
Do they know you're in America tonight?
Yes, they know.
Okay. That's good. That's good. That's a long way. So you went to the clinic that was farthest away because it was difficult for you to risk being publicly exposed as HIV positive.
Yes.
What are the attitudes in your town, in Durban, perhaps more widely in South Africa, that make it so difficult to be honest, to be open, candid about AIDS and HIV?
It is very negative. You can't go down this. If they know that you are HIV positive, if you go down the streets, they will point at you and laugh and talk behind your back.
Even now, when so many people have it?
Yes, and it's getting worse now.
Why worse?
I won't say that they hate people who are HIV positive. I think that they are afraid of getting the disease, and they don't understand the disease at all.
Nonklankla, speak to us, if you would, about the culture and the understanding of HIV/AIDS in South Africa as one example today. Do people know how it's caused? Do they know about how it is and is not transmitted? Is there in all cities and towns such a kind of stigma attached to it?
Many people are aware how HIV/AIDS is transmitted, but there is that fear. And fear of the family being isolated, and they end up, you know, not welcoming or being warm to people who are HIV positive. But there are so many programs that are being done to educate the communities. There are many AIDS awareness campaigns done and school campaigns on HIV/AIDS that is done.
Today, with 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 nationally being HIV positive, every family must have people who are HIV positive practically. Is it so, or is it somehow socially stratified? Is it poor, the middle class? Where is the heaviest concentration of AIDS, of HIV?
It's across the spectrum. The problem with the poor group, they are highly affected because of of lack of having nutritious things, and they deteriorate fast. But we see many classes of people who are HIV positive.
Numusa, the Sinikitemba choir grew out of, as I understand, a kind of effort to make some money that women were involved with you with beadwork. Did everybody who's in the choir do this? Get started with handicrafts and beadwork before you moved into the choir, or do I have that story right?
Everybody in the center does beadwork. It's just a group of people who decided to join the choir, but everybody in the center does do.
And the beadwork is to support the choir or to earn cash for individuals.
Yes.
Both.
It's the support for an individual income for a person. Yeah.
And as I understand it, it kind of had the quality of what in America might be a quilting bee, where people are sitting around, they're doing beadwork, they're singing, and suddenly a choir.
Mm-hmm. In fact, why we started this income generation project, it was because many people could not access medication in our hospital. Mm-hmm. Then we are now paying them half of the selling price of whatever product is completed, and the other half is kept aside for free medication. And it's therapeutic on its own because people are able to share experiences, and the support group for people who are HIV positive meets every Tuesday to share experiences. That is where they started this choir. Because whenever we have got these meetings, they sing for about an hour, praying and appealing to God for mercy.
And as a medical practitioner, do you see a positive impact of that community, that song?
Fortunately, I'm not a medical practitioner. I'm a social worker.
All right, then, as a social worker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say people are really benefiting by being in the group.
Pretty. Numusa, you both look so robust and healthy. Are there antiretroviral drugs available at the clinic? Are you taking antiretroviral drugs?
No, not myself.
And Pretty?
No, I have never taken anything.
Well, something's working for you here. Nongklongkla, what percentage of the men and women who come to the clinic have access to the kinds of drugs that can really, push the effects of HIV back?
There are very few people who are on antiretroviral drugs. It's very, very costly. The majority of people in the clinic are only getting prophylactic treatment just to curb opportunistic infection. And we treat them holistically, taking care of their spiritual needs, psychological needs, social needs, and get medication when needs arise.
Numusa, how do you feel about the fairness or equity of South African society when it comes to HIV and AIDS? As a woman, do women face a particular burden, a particular threat or risk of HIV/AIDS because of custom, tradition, relations between men and women, the power balance?
I can't be sure, but myself, I think for maybe a boyfriend, like men are, most of them are living in denial. Well, when I try to tell my boyfriend about my HIV status, he told me he doesn't know about anything about that because he hasn't got it. So I think most of the women are facing almost the same thing, and some get hit by that. But and men, knowing very well that they are, maybe mostly they are the cause. They are the ones who infected the women. Mm. But most of the time, we are getting the blame. I don't know about others.
But. Your boyfriend cannot really honestly be ignorant of HIV/AIDS. This is a kind of a there's some falseness here, isn't there?
But that's what he told me. He told me he knows nothing about it.
And he doesn't want to know.
He told me he doesn't want anything to do with it because I was telling him about the child. The child was sick. So we ended up, the relationship had to end. Mm-hmm. And that was it. I had to look after the child myself.
Pretty, what's your experience of the men in your community and their understanding of HIV/AIDS, their understanding of the vulnerability of women, of themselves?
I think men are not accepting of this disease. If you tell a man that you are HIV positive, maybe if a man is proposing to you and you say, I'm HIV positive, then the man will say, no, it's fine. If I get it from you, it's fine.
They honestly do. They say that.
Yes, they will say that, but it's because they don't believe that you can be pretty if you are HIV positive and you can't be healthy. They think that they can see a person by being slim and being...
So only if you're really showing the effects of disease do they begin to shy away.
Yes.
Nongklongkla, is that your experience, your observation, that men are widely this blithe about the risk of HIV/AIDS?
Yeah, I would say I really think it's a correct thing because there are those people who are still ignorant about the existence of HIV/AIDS.
Honestly ignorant, in spite of everything?
Yeah, definitely.
Isn't it in the newspapers? Isn't it on the radio? Isn't it everywhere?
It's there everywhere.
So how can they be ignorant?
Because
they want to be or because they really are?
They don't believe, as Priti has just mentioned, they think a person automatically shows symptoms.
Wow. You know? Listeners, you can join us. Can you imagine a world where this generation is living lives 20 years shorter than the last? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Tug is calling from Melrose, Massachusetts. Hi, Tug. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys? I want to say sunny bono to your guest.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody's smiling. Everybody's happy. What? Translate, please, Tug.
That's hello in Zulu.
Sunny bono. We thought he sang with Cher. Sorry.
He did. I was born in South Africa, and I've actually gone back to make a film about it.
Yes.
And I lived in Pietermaritzburg and Durban as a kid.
Yes.
And I have a question for guests. There are two questions, really.
Okay.
One of them is, first, if they are from Zulu backgrounds and traditional Zulu backgrounds, how accepting do they find their experience in Durban and the Zulu part of the country versus other parts, number one? And number two, where do they draw their wonderful songs from? Are these traditional melodies? Are these church melodies? I'd love to hear the answer.
These are both great questions, but let me clarify on the first one. Can you let the rest of us in on what you're getting at there, Tug, with your question about Zulu culture?
Well, I've heard two things. Number one, I know that in traditional Zulu culture, there's a tremendous amount of respect that a woman must show to the man. Mm-hmm. And I would expect that because there's a strong warrior ethos in traditional Zulu culture, that it would be harder in some ways for women to be dealing with it than maybe elsewhere in South Africa.
Let's put it to them, and thanks. It's a wonderful question. Nongklongkla, what about this? Your literature says that that KwaZulu-Natal, where Durban is the province most badly affected by the AIDS epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a relationship between Zulu culture and the prevalence of HIV/AIDS?
I wouldn't say there is a relationship between that. It's just a promiscuity because the culture binds people to faithfulness.
Binds people to faithfulness. That seems at odds with the idea of promiscuity.
Sorry?
That seems to contradict the notion of promiscuity.
Definitely. So the culture... A man can have more than one wife,
mm-hmm.
But be faithful to them. But promiscuity is going behind a person's back and doing something that is not right.
You say you have both going on.
Yes. Sorry?
You have both going on. Is that what you're suggesting then?
Yeah, these days we have got both going on, which end up... spreading HIV/AIDS.
Tug's question seems to wonder if women are in a less advantageous position in Zulu culture, less empowered than they might be in other regional cultures of South Africa.
These days, our women are really empowered. They are coming up. That is why in our center, we started this income generation so that mm-hmm. women can have something to live on and be able to negotiate other things better and be able to be independent.
Mm. And what about your repertoire of songs? Where do you draw them from?
Others are traditional songs. Others are church songs. And they've composed one of them. It's coming up, but their intention is to come up with their own compositions relevant to the situation.
That's terrific. Tug, thank you for a call. Boemo is calling from Boston. Hi, Boemo. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Linjani vosis.
Sikona unjanuen.
Hey, everybody's got the language except me here.
How? But thank you so much for coming so far and sharing, you know, how things are back home. Mm. I'm actually from Botswana, so you know how close and involved we are together.
Yes.
And I'm actually very, very hurt at what is still seeming to be more discrimination, more fear, and all the other things that you can think of. That.
Boemo, explain for us. You say you're from Botswana. You see discrimination and fear growing?
Well, I wouldn't say that from a distance. When I left in 2000, the end of 2000, I thought that it was taking a different form. It was filtering out in different ways in terms of fear. I mean, people had moved from not even sharing with anyone. Or maybe they started off not even admitting it to the doctors after a test has been done. Going through the denial phase, not even telling a partner or a sister or any family member. I thought people had moved from those circles and were struggling with what you look at, maybe fear of being isolated at work and maybe fear of losing their job or any benefits in the larger society because people were not yet there. Although people have had, you know, losses or people who are living with HIVs in their families, they were dealing with it at that level. And offering compassion at that level. But the systems in place were not kind of helping out so that people can feel much more freer.
Boemo, let me put it to Namusa. Namusa, you've lived with this for 9 years. What's your observation? Is the social acceptance becoming greater, or is it becoming less embracing, less tolerant somehow?
Well, I think the acceptance is it's a bit improving. I think what helps is the message that we give and the for us to come out and tell that we've got the virus. I think it helps to other people.
Are you rare in that now? When you perform in South Africa, I presume.
Yes, we do.
And when you do, are people amazed to say, I can't believe you're publicly admitting that you're HIV positive?
Most of the time when we go and do the performances, we don't say in public that we are HIV positive. We just go as the choir, but we do, and I do, and go. I sometimes go and do motivational talks to the like churches and the firms and the like factories to quite a very big crowd of people, and it helps. It really helps. It's doing like there is a very great difference, like for us to go out and let the people know that we are.
I'm sure there is. Boemo, thank you for your call. We're going to come back and talk more. We're talking about women, AIDS, and Africa with HIV-positive members of South Africa's Siniki Temba Choir. You can join us when the balance of power in sexual relationships is unequal. Do societies suffer more? And how does an epidemic of this depth and scale get stopped? Let's go into the break with Yes, Lord, sung by the all-African, all-HIV-positive Siniki Temba Choir. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Yes, Lord, completely yes. My soul say yes. Yes, Lord.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about women, Africa, and AIDS with HIV members of South Africa's Siniki Temba Choir. They are in the studio. They are wonderful, and we're privileged to have them with us tonight. Question, what is the world's responsibility to Africa in the AIDS crisis, and what is Africa's responsibility to itself? How does a society go on when every fourth person is HIV positive, when farmers, doctors, teachers, mothers are dying? And can you imagine the healing power of community and of song? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. Martin's calling from Boston. Hi, Martin. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I want to greet your guest in Swahili. Jambo.
Jambo.
All right. Everybody's ready to go with that, Martin.
Thank you very much. Again, my name is Martin Owino. I'm the president for Africa Health Foundation and Initiative here in Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
I want to thank your guest for that courage. It's not easy for women to come out because of the cultural forces which really embedded them in so many ways. But I want to assure them that we here in Massachusetts, the sub-Saharan African community, have gone ahead to identify ourselves with our problem back home. And what we are doing here is that we encourage everybody to initiate small projects in their own villages to help orphans. And every year we have World AIDS annual Sub-Saharan African Day here, December 1, this time we are meeting in Cambridge, and the former ambassador to Tanzania.
Martin, let me ask you, if I could, it sounds like you understand the situation well. How would you describe the courage of these women in standing up publicly and singing as HIV-positive women in Africa?
I tell you, it is credible, because the power imbalances between the gender stems back from childhood. Boys are trained not even to cry, to be macho in all circumstances. And when they grow up, they subdue women. The women are supposed to listen, to not to be heard in anything, but to take orders. So it's not something that we can just come overnight to say, let us have it equally.
And Martin, when you hear my guests tonight, pretty Namusa, describe how a boyfriend doesn't even want to know when a girlfriend is HIV positive, that he says, it's all right, never mind. What does that reflect?
It's quite absurd because of that mentality. First of all, I'm sorry to say that men, you know, behave like saints, but the bottom line, they are the main problem in this epidemic. But again, as I said, sometimes we blame the top, but we forget to look where the whole thing started. It's the training of the young man, you know, which brings all that kind of denial and superiority, even when they are wrong.
Martin, thank you for your call and for the word of what you're doing here in the U.S. in support of HIV/AIDS sufferers in Africa. Thanks for calling. Abi is calling from Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Hi, Abi. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah, I have a contribution to make as per. I am from Africa,
uh-huh.
And I know quite a lot about the culture of Africa. Women generally, they are subjective somehow to the culture. They are supposed to be a lawyer to the men, whereas men are free to sleep with women as they like.
So you're saying because women are supposed to be loyal, to be faithful, men can sleep with anybody?
Yeah, the culture is somehow biased.
Abi, your line is bad. I apologize, but I think we've got the main point. Let me put it to my guests.
Okay.
Abi is from Nigeria and describing the situation. Do you face the same situation in South Africa, where women are encouraged to be loyal to a single man and men are promiscuous?
Yes, we do. We're supposed to have one boyfriend, but the boyfriend will have as many girlfriends as he like, and you can't ask him, why do you have, because it will beat you up.
Can
the only thing you can do, you have to leave them.
Can HIV/AIDS be solved in that kind of situation?
No, it would be very difficult. They have to first change their attitudes.
Nonklonkla, I see you're shaking your head no as well. This seems like an enormous cultural barrier at the same time. It's not perhaps too much to say that the society itself is being threatened by this disease. Mm-hmm. Can you see the beginnings of a cultural change in Africa in the face of the threat, the damage being done by AIDS?
I think we need to re-socialize our men.
That's a vast project.
Yeah,
Is it beginning to happen, or can you imagine how it might happen?
I think it will be corrected in the next generation and not now, because really our men are not taking this thing seriously.
That is serious in itself. Esther is calling. Welcome, Esther. You're on the line.
Hello, Tom. Tom, I want to congratulate you, NPR, for bringing in and giving space to the people, those who are affected, to speak for themselves.
It's our privilege.
That's really great. Your South African guests, my African sisters, are doing a fine job. It's reminding me of when cancer used to be a scary disease and people wouldn't talk about it.
Cancer,
and
yeah.
We used to be
years ago.
Scared, mm-hmm. surprised to see people surviving. Mm-hmm. And they are surviving HIV infection, so that's wonderful. Merhaba to you, too. That's my native language.
Where are you from in Africa, Esther?
I'm from Eritrea.
Ah, uh-huh, yes.
And I'm resident in the U.S.
And your observation about the conversation?
And the main point I want to make is that it's good for us to be focusing on AIDS in Africa, but we should also bear in mind that it's not all of Africa that we talk about when we concentrate on South Africa, which deserves all our attention.
Are you saying that the AIDS is concentrated in the southern part of the continent?
No, I'm actually coming to the point of how statistics are being used, because we're being misled to think that most people are dying of AIDS, when in fact we know many people are, more people than die of AIDS are actually dying from preventable infections related to lack of clean water, sanitation and hygiene. Malnutrition in general kills women and children.
So is your concern, Esther, that in focusing on AIDS, we may overlook some even more fundamental public health issues in Africa?
Yes, I think what I'm coming to is to say that poverty and inequality are killing. It's not necessarily the disease specific.
And yet at the top of the hour, we heard from Michael Grunwald, the Washington Post reporter, saying how the new threat of famine in AIDS is being seen as terribly compounded by HIV/AIDS because societies that had traditional ways of surviving famine, even if there was death in the process, that the adults simply don't have the strength to carry their families through a famine anymore. That sounds like a pretty significant AIDS impact.
I agree, but only it has to be site-specific, country-specific, mm-hmm. because we've seen that Uganda turned the tide. Mm-hmm. It was the worst place for AIDS, according to the statistics that we were getting in the 80s, mm-hmm. and it improved in the 90s up to now. So it's not impossible to turn it, and I think I disagree also with the first point that people are more able to survive famine and not AIDS. I think they're both preventable, and we have to look at preventable methods at the same time and not be misled by just the one side of the equation, which paints Africa more dark each time we speak about AIDS and HIV.
Esther, it's fair enough, and it's an interesting and nuanced point that you make. Nonklankla, when you look at this, so we all know that this is not Africa's only problem. There are others. There are points of light and hope as well. Do you struggle with this? Is it you're raising awareness through your tour of the United States of HIV/AIDS in Africa? That would seem to be important. Do you ever fear that it may overshadow other issues that the world needs to consider in regard to Africa?
Not necessarily. In fact, we are grateful to the Church World Service who have organized the tour, and we hope the proceeds will go towards all HIV initiative in the whole of Africa, and the major problem being that of poverty. So I think if we can keep poverty, even those that are down the line can at least be in a better state. But we need to keep opportunistic infection as well.
I want to hear more from our two singers. Namusa, what has the impact of being in the choir been for you, on you personally? Has it helped you emotionally, physically?
Yes. The fact that the choir is comprised of the people who are in the support group, the people who speak the same language as I do, who have the same feeling as I have, it really keeps me going.
And when you hear the kind of comments that we've tended toward here this evening about the role of men in the spread of AIDS, it makes me wonder, is there bitterness among the women in this choir or not, toward men or not?
No, because Not all of them have got the same problem, but most men do the same thing, but not amongst the choir members. Mm-hmm. We just feel like sorry for them that they don't understand, but yeah, it's not that bad.
And pretty, when you're with the choir, when you're singing, when you're doing the beadwork, is it a relief for you? Is it a moral support for you?
Yes, it's a relief in terms of finance, because I can get some money to buy things that I need and to be able to feed my daughter. Mm. And for moral support, I also get that in the choir, because it's people who understand my situation.
Now you're here in the United States, a country where many HIV-positive people do have antiretroviral drugs that are rather effective in combating this disease. How do you feel about that? Does it feel unjust? Oh, tell the truth.
The only thing I can say is we also wish for the opportunity to get antiretroviral drugs in our society, because most people are dying. And if they would get drugs, it would be better, because most breadwinners are dying of AIDS. And most people are not working. And those who are working, they are not earning enough money to take R1,000 every month for just medication. So,
Namusa, can you imagine having enough money to buy these drugs yourself?
Yes, that would be wonderful. Having enough money to afford them. Like, drugs, I know that at some point my body is going to need the treatment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I can't deny that we really need them.
Well, we want to hear some more of your singing before we go out tonight. It's been a real honor and privilege, and I want to express our admiration for what you're doing and wish you a great tour across the U.S. I hope it goes very well. We're going to close the hour by listening to a little more of the all-African, all-HIV-positive Siniki Themba Choir from Durban, South Africa. This is Count the Years. Siniki Themba Choir, you make a beautiful song. Thanks for being with us. Namusa, thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you.
And Pretty, thank you for joining us.
And thank you for inviting me.
And Nomkhankla Muchongo, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Cassettes and CDs of On Point are available for $15. Go to onpointradio.org or call 1-800-909-9287.
We shall be with you.
This is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by...